White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 365.
Listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, I think you summed it up in very concise terms on our little outline. You said, losing to Georgia sucks.
True statement.
And yet, I think we all saw it coming. And we have a few things to say about that, I think, tonight. Or today, actually. This is a rare early morning recording. It's Veterans Day, and happy Veterans Day. It's Veterans Day celebration day, Monday. And happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there, all our military folks. That includes you, right? Your Army connections.
And Jared.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And all
so
of our others.
Thank you all for your service, and we appreciate it.
Absolutely. So we were able to do an early show and get it out maybe in the middle of the day today would be nice and have a little extra time on that. I am, by the way, planning to put the first episode of our fandom miniseries, We Believed, the history of Auburn through the eyes of Auburn fans. It's been on the Patreon site for a couple of weeks now. And that's just been an extra bonus for our patrons to get to listen to it and check it out, and they seem to have enjoyed it. But I'm planning on moving that over to the regular feed very soon. The thing I've been holding back for is not that I'm trying to deny it to our other listeners, but just that I didn't want to have two shows out, you know, in the same few days because they compete with each other. And you know, if we're going to go to all the trouble of doing a show, I don't want it to get swept along by the next thing to come along just in a couple of days. So when we have a break, I guess probably would that be after the Alabama game?
Sure. Yeah. I certainly don't want it to overshadow Liberty Hate Week.
No. We can't let... can't let it...
Liberty Hate Week 2018.
Because it officially is Liberty Hate Week 2018. But before we get to that Titanic matchup, we got to talk a little bit about the Georgia game. So there was at least one good thing to come out of that game, which was Ryan Davis.
Yeah, very exciting. He's now the all-time leader in receptions for Auburn University, which is a big deal, and we're happy for him. He's been a very dependable, productive guy, and really. The last 2 years, mm-hmm. I mean, Kerryon was great last year, but Ryan has been really consistent and reliable and helped Stidham a lot. And, you know, I think we don't appreciate how good he is. I think there was a stat the other day that for SEC receivers yards after the catch, I think he was first.
I wouldn't doubt it. Well, we always say, right, he never catches a ball more than like 10 yards downfield. It's all what he does with the ball once he gets it.
Yep.
I mean, would you have ever pegged him as the one to break Courtney Taylor's receptions record? He just kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I don't think he was highly rated coming in, was he? Not super, not like this, not like our number one receiver of all time.
No, and I think his role is this dependable short yardage safety valve guy, but then also turning into this, great after the catch guy, mm-hmm. It really did kind of come as a surprise. But and I think we, at the end of the game, you know, we sometimes forget. You look up and he had 8 catches a week or whatever. So
yeah,
I appreciate him, and I appreciate that he, you know, keeps going hard all the time. And he's not a big guy, but he's out there, you know, making plays and making stuff happen.
Just imagine our offense if he wasn't out there. Yeah, wow. So it's amazing to have as many receivers as we do, and we basically throw to 2 guys. Well, I guess last couple of weeks, Seth Williams has been getting more. But it really is short passes to Ryan Davis and long passes to Slayton. And that's it, pretty much.
It is. But it's interesting. We're not going to get a 1,000-yard rusher this season.
Nope.
But we did break the receiving record. It's just an interesting, mm-hmm. you know, statement about this year's offense and
or lack
where
of
we are. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're breaking the receiving record, but that's a lifetime achievement, though. That's not this year. It's not like Ronnie Daniels in 1999 where, oh, we had no running game, but, hey, the receiver just went crazy and got us, you know, 80-yard touchdown catches where he dragged the entire defense 40 yards into the end zone. It's just more like over the last 3 or 4 years, Ryan Davis has added up lots of catches every game, and this is now when he's cross the finish line of that numbers, you know, of beating out Courtney Taylor. So this has been a year where we couldn't run at all and we could barely throw, you know, and he just got enough. It's a little deceptive, in other words. This is not going to go down in history as the greatest passing year in Auburn history. If we hadn't been able to pass this year, it would go down as like our worst offense in forever, probably since 2012. And it may be our worst offense since 2012, but probably is. But yeah, at least he's been there. He's been one of the things that has more or less worked, though not all of the season. Even then, you know, there were stretches there where he didn't do a lot, didn't catch a lot this season. So it's just been weird. It's just been strange.
Yep.
Another road loss at Georgia. This is getting old. When we kicked that field goal to go to have 10 points, I thought, well, at least we broke the 7 points
I thought this
curse.
Well, at least we scored. It was in the second quarter, too.
Yeah, so yeah. That's exciting.
It really was deja vu, though. I mean, we'd seen this movie so many times before. We go over there, we do okay in the first quarter, and then it kind of the wheels fall off.
So,
especially offensively.
At this rate. All right, hold on. So we went 3 games scoring 7 points in the first quarter. And then this game, we scored in the second. 26, 28. So at this rate, we will score in the fourth quarter at Georgia in 2030. 2030 is the number I get, right? If it takes us 3 years to get to the next quarter, then we will score in the second quarter – I mean, the third quarter in 2024, and we will score in the fourth quarter in 2030. So that's something to look forward to.
Jeez.
I mean, when was the last time we scored in the fourth quarter at Georgia? 2000.
I mean, was it the I mean, it wasn't the Obamana Remishudu fumble play, was it?
I really hope not, because that was 2005. I hope that wasn't the last time. Oh, well, we've got lots of listeners that enjoy digging into stuff like that, so I'm sure they'll let us know. I'm not going to take time out of the show to figure it out right now. You mentioned Auburn's offensive game plan here. What was our offensive game plan? It looked like it was to go wide, which is like option B for Gus. Gus's offensive game plans are usually plan A is run right at him, go up the middle. If that doesn't work, plan B is just go, entirely wide and throw the bubble screen. So that looked to me to be the game plan. What am I missing?
We did try and throw the ball more. I mean, we still tried to run the ball a little bit, but we did try and throw the ball more early in the game. And I think Stidham looked very comfortable at the beginning of the game. I think we were calling a bunch of throws that he felt good about it. He was really accurate at the start of the game. You know, I think Whitlow is clearly not healthy.
No.
I mean, I think he, you know, that hit that he took a couple weeks ago really set him back, and it's obvious that he's not near what he was in the, you know, the early part of the Ole Miss game, for example. And so we, you know, we ran him a couple times, but he didn't do much. We ran Shivers a couple times. He had one decent run. A lot of short passes, a lot of trying to get the ball to Seth Williams.
Although, you know, he only caught three, but yeah, they tried.
Yeah. But, you know, then we got to the point in the game when Georgia was, you know, taking the lead and making stuff happen and putting pressure on us. And I feel like the offense kind of came apart. Couldn't run the ball. Couldn't, you know, complete passes consistently. We broke out the stupid Coxcat quarterback thing again, which I'm sure that Auburn Twitter just melted down when that happened. So.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Once again, I asked the question about Sean Shivers. Whitlow got the most carries, 9 carries for 26 yards with an average of 2.9. Shivers had 4 carries for 43 yards with an average of 10.8 and a long of 30. So why are we not using Sean Shivers more?
I mean, basically he had one long run and then 3 short runs. But it really is a good question, because we were going to more of a spread out pass kind of offense. I would like to see us throw the ball to Shivers a couple times too.
Yeah.
You know, let's do some little screens and swing passes or, you know, wheel routes to him. But then also, like, Whitlow's not 100%. I mean, he's really, really struggling to get stuff done out there. And we needed a spark. We needed something to, we needed big play potential too. We didn't try to throw the ball down the field very much at all. So we needed somebody to make some big plays, and he's one of the guys that can do that. So I felt like, you know, giving him a shot to make some things happen probably would have been a good idea.
The current statistics, let me see. Currently, at least in terms of yards, Whitlow is number 11 in the SEC with 668 yards. I'm not sure if that's updated. Does that sound right? I feel like I feel like he was around that a couple of weeks ago, but then he hadn't added much to it, has he? So,
nope.
Yeah, so he's going to end this. He'll probably have a few. He's not going to end up more than 800 yards, I don't think, with the two punts we have left.
Well, I mean, and if we were smart, we'd just hold him out this week to rest him, but they probably won't do that. They'll probably try and get a bunch of yards for him. So.
Interestingly, Travion Williams has now passed Benny Snell at Kentucky to be the leading rusher in terms of yards, even though he has fewer carries.
He's been great. I mean, he's really good. So.
Yeah. That's interesting. So, and a Vanderbilt running back is number 4. That's a Vanderbilt running back is number 4, an Auburn running back is number 11.
What the hell is the world coming to?
I don't know. That's disturbing.
That is the truth.
Yes. But yeah, you're right. Stidham had a good passing, pretty good. I mean, here's the thing about Stidham's passing game. He was 24 for 36, which is not too bad. But it was for a total of 163 yards with an average of 4.5.
Yeah. That's tiny.
Yeah. Fromm's average was 9.6.
Yes, we have to throw the ball further down the field. I get it. I mean, but Georgia is not a good pass rush team. Stidham had time on Saturday. We should have thrown the ball down the field some more to Slayton and Seth Williams and Schwartz, but we didn't.
And here's the numbers that really boggle my mind. DeAndre Swift, 186 yards on 17 carries, 10.9 per touch. And then Elijah Holyfield, 93 yards on 15 carries, 6.2 per touch. And then their third back, 5 carries for 37, average 7.4. So, I mean, they ran for, let me see, where's my box score? They ran for 303 yards on our defense.
Mm.
And I mean, the time of possession had something to do with that. They had 38 minutes and 15 seconds. We had 21 minutes and 45 seconds. So, but I mean, these numbers, no matter which way you look at them, are just depressing.
Do you know that we are in games against conference opponents, we are last in college football, in Division I college football, in time of possession?
Good grief.
Well, and if we were going fast and scored a bunch of points, I wouldn't worry about that, but we aren't.
So no, and we're just
trying to go slower.
We're putting our defense back out on the field, yeah, even though we're trying not to. Well, and the other thing too, you know, this was the weird thing. Tell me if you maybe this was just me, but the weird thing to me about this game was, and I'm looking at the box score, the by quarter, there was only 7 points scored in the entire second half. Georgia tacked on their late touchdown to make it 27-10. They won the game in the second quarter, but because there was only one score in the entire second half, it seemed like the second half went by really fast. I remember I was sitting there on the couch watching the game, and I kept thinking, okay, well, there were a couple of drives where we almost got something going, and then Stidham like overthrew a wide open guy, or something just ridiculous happened that stopped our drive just when we got it going. And I remember thinking, oh, we're so close, right? We can still, you know, when it was 20-10, you know, I was thinking, you know, come on, it's just 20-10. We can get back in this. And I looked at the clock, and there was like 4 minutes to go in the game.
Well, you're right about the second quarter thing. The biggest play of the entire game was a third down when Auburn was on offense.
Oh.
And Stidham overthrew Whitlow on a little pass to the left. It was like third and three, and Whitlow was open.
Wide open.
And Georgia had just scored to take a lead, but I guess it was like 14-10 at that point or something.
Something like that.
I guess maybe they had two field goals, so it was 13-10. But it was
– yeah.
They had just started to get things going, and we had some success to that point of the game on offense. And that was, to me, that was the entire turning point of the game, because we didn't complete the pass. We punted, they scored again, and then they got the ball to start the second half. And that was it. Like that was, to me, that was the point in the game when we lost it. And, you know, the play was there and they didn't make it.
So. I absolutely agree. I was on the floor. I was like, because that was, yeah, absolutely. I think the second key play, and I think you're right, I think the second key play was when we stopped Georgia with a big sack and we got called for targeting on Big Cat. So it was, instead of us having the ball, they went, I think, did they go ahead and score on that drive?
No, I mean, they ended up kicking a field goal. And I think they would have kicked a field goal anyway after the sack. So the end result, I don't think, was different. But
yeah,
it was, again, three more plays on the field for our defense in a game when they were, you know, wiped out, exhausted.
That's right. I remember they threw
out one of our, you know, defensive ends that, you know, we needed.
We desperately needed it. Absolutely.
So it was a huge penalty. I mean, it was a big momentum thing, because that we felt like that was a – that was a play that should have given us a lift with the sack and pushing them back and all that. But instead, it turned into this big negative where Big Cat got thrown out with the targeting call and Georgia got a first down. So that was the part that was really just gut-wrenching.
And it's a good thing we play Liberty next week, because that way he didn't have to miss the first half against Alabama.
It's true.
We're going to need him there. Let's see. Well, we had the Cox Cat. I know you're excited.
I don't have anything else to say about that.
We didn't run the Schwartz sweep.
Again, like, we didn't. I don't feel like Georgia was going out of their way to try and focus on taking him out of the game. Maybe I'm not wrong, but I don't think that. But when you have a player that is explosive as him, how we aren't trying to get him the ball more in different kinds of ways is just beyond me. I don't know.
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Well, I feel like they just it worked so poorly last week against A&M. It was just not there. And I wonder if they just kind of got – they feel like it's a bad idea to even go there.
But that doesn't mean it's bad, you know, all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, but we've said before, it's been a long time since the jet sweep was a very successful part of our offense. I know it does certain things to help the run game in other ways, but with him – I mean, but you need it to be an effective thing that you have to worry about too, and it's never effective.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the last Auburn player to run it consistently effectively was Ontario McCaleb.
Part of it is that there's like pieces of a puzzle that fit together, and we're not going to go down this road again. We're talking about do we need a running quarterback? But that sweep combined with the running quarterback and the read option made the defense move out of position that enabled kind of a lot of the inside run kind of stuff that we wanted to do out of that offense work better.
Yeah.
And when teams aren't worried about that stuff, then it's much easier to defend the sweep piece.
The offensive line, I have a good quote on the AU Sports email group. One of the guys there that's been really good over many years at breaking the games down every week and everything, he had a great line, I thought, about the offensive line. He said, "This is not the worst offensive line I've seen at Auburn, but it has the most talent of any bad offensive line I've ever seen." What do you think about that?
I think that's fair. I think... Well, you know, I said early in the year, I think the offensive line was the limiting factor for this team, and it really was.
It really was.
I think the biggest difference between last year's team and this year's team, if there's one position on the entire field, I think the biggest drop-off, and it's just titanic level, is Braden Smith at right guard to Mike Horton. Like, the level of performance that Braden Smith gave us last year versus what Mike Horton has given us in every game this year, the gap there is enormous. Braden Smith was a second-round draft pick. He was a consistent guy who was tough and blew people off the ball and pushed people back and pulled and knocked guys down and stuff and finished the play. And when we ran the ball, he was out there pushing people around. And Horton has been, a liability on the offensive line this year. He's gotten beat on the pass rush. He can't get out and block guys on the perimeter. And I think on the inside blocking, he's not making a difference. So to me, out of all the guys we lost last year, whatever the secondary guys, or even like, I think I think it's a bigger drop off there than it is from Kerryon to Booby Whitlow.
Yeah. Wow. When he's healthy, but yeah.
Yeah. But I think the difference is greater there. And I think, like, to me, the number one thing that needs to happen in the offseason is, like, we got to get somebody else who could play there. Like, I'm not sure that guy's on the roster. I wanted, like, JUCO offensive lineman, grad transfer offensive lineman, whoever. We got to have somebody else that could come in and start and play at a high level at that position next year, because I'm not seeing it.
What about the defense? Is it just that we're playing? Mike had another good line about that. He said, you know, Pat Dye used to say that you lose a game for every freshman you have to start. He said, we don't play that many games.
No, and I don't think the freshmen have been the cause of the problems. We played a lot of Kevin Steele knows that we're going to lose a lot of guys on defense then this year. We are. A lot of it is on the front seven. And so he's been playing a lot of their backups so that when next year rolls around, those guys are tested. There was a lot of KJ Britt and Chandler Wooten the last few weeks. At linebacker, Wooten's been playing as much as Derrick Williams. And there's been a lot of, rotation. We always rotate among the defensive linemen. But those guys, the young guys in there, have been getting 5 to 10 snaps a game to make them ready. And I'm fine with that. And we played the safeties a lot. We knew we were going to have to Sherwood and Monday. We knew we were going to have to play those guys a lot. And I don't think that's the issue. I think it's two things to me. It's number one, it's the time of possession thing where I think the defense is physically worn down at this point. But also, I think there's a mental thing where I think the defense is, you know, not – they wouldn't say this and admit it, but I think, like, they're resigned a little bit to the fact that the offense isn't getting the job done.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go out there and kill themselves every week stopping the other team when the offense can't score any points. I mean, there's a – and I'm not saying they're not trying and all that kind of stuff, but there's part of playing defense in the SEC where you have to, you know, stand in front of a 300-pound guy on the other team who wants to crush you into the ground mm-hmm. and hold him off so some, you know, and let your body take the punishment of holding him off so somebody else can make a tackle. And they're, you know.
Well, that's one of the reasons I was so happy that we won last week was because it gave the defense a chance to see that the offense could actually win a game. I thought that was very important beyond just that win. Now, it didn't work out this current week, but I just thought the defense needed some reassurance that their hard work could conceivably result in something good.
Yes, that's fair. And I think, you know, I was really high on this defense, and I think in the first half of the season they played very, very well.
Yeah.
I think there's a number of guys that are banged up on there too, but just normal at this time of year. But I think part of it is just for defense to be successful, the offense has to score a bunch of points and put some pressure on the other team. I think we've talked all year about the lack of pass rush, and third down against Georgia was terrible. Like, we could not make a play on third down in this game on defense to save our lives. We didn't get pressure on Fromm. Your tackling was very poor. And Swift is great. He's a really good player. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, you know, the third down defense was really, really bad this game. And Kevin Steele would tell you that. But that was really a tough pill to swallow in that game.
That's been an issue for us for a long time, too.
Yeah.
On and off, but yeah. It doesn't help that Nick Coe got hurt.
No, so I mean, you had Bryant was already out, and then Coe went out too, and then so that's two of your better defensive ends that are out of the game.
Yeah. Do we have any information on Nick Coe? I haven't heard anything.
I have not heard anything either.
Yeah. It was his arm, though, oddly, right? I mean, did you the replay? We were amazed. Yeah, because I thought he got a concussion or something because he got my wife actually he got hit by two players at the same time in the face. An Auburn player and a Georgia player both hit him head on in the face and his head snapped back. My wife said, can Auburn be charged with targeting our own player?
I feel like one of them hit him in the shoulder with the helmet, and the other guy hit him, you know, like he came in to make the tackle. One of the guy's helmets hit his shoulder, one of them hit him in the head. Yeah. And I think maybe he has a shoulder thing. Well,
that's what I thought too, but then they said it was like his forearm or something. So, well, who knows? It was just an odd bang bang kind of play, but I'd never had to entertain even the notion of targeting your own player before.
But, like, I mean, it was tough to watch because when he was coming off the field, he was crying and he said the F words on national TV. So,
yeah, man, I hope he gets better fast. Good grief. All right. We got to talk about this one. The fake field goal. What do you think?
You know, I get it. Their kicker is very popular. He's probably the most popular player on that team. The fans love him. And if they had scored on that play, that stadium would have been burnt to the ground. They'd have gone bananas. But winning the game like they were, going for a fake field goal was cheap. And, you know, I hate Georgia already, but Kirby Smart can kiss my ass after that. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not cool. There's a difference between, you know, remember back in the day, Steve Spurrier used to get a lot of flack for throwing the ball late when they were winning. And his defense was, you know, yep, my quarterback's like major league pitches. They got to get the throws in. Yep. And he just acted like that was practice. He acted like it was Florida football practice to keep throwing the ball in the fourth quarter. But this is different. There's just something inherently offensive about it.
Again, they were lined up. They were winning. They were lined up to kick a field goal, and they'd ran. You're running a trick play when you're ahead by that much late in the game is cheap.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's a difference. Like if Spurrier's running his normal offense, then it's like fine, stop.
Right.
You know, he doesn't have to go into turtle mode just because he's winning. So
this is like saying I'm going to get super creative and clever and tricky just to make it worse on you than it already is.
Mm-hmm.
Which just doesn't seem necessary. I'm not whining and crying, and that's fine, you know, whatever. But get your points, Georgia. But it just unnecessarily riles up people against you is what it just seems like. It's unnecessary. But anyway,
Can I say one more thing about like I?
Yeah,
this wasn't the reason we lost, but I'm gonna say like the officiating of that game stunk again.
Yeah.
They were holding our defensive line the entire freaking game, and I didn't the targeting call. I get it was in the spirit of the rules, whatever. It's fine. I thought Fromm was getting dragged down, and that's why he got Bryant hit him in the head. He wasn't aiming for the head, or anything. He didn't leave his feet or anything stupid. So I think that was just unfortunate. But they were holding our defensive line a lot in that game. A lot. And some of it was like incredibly blatant. So I just felt like it's tough to stop them already, but if the referees are going to let that go, it becomes very hard to do. So anyhow, that wouldn't have made the difference. We needed to score points and tackle better if we were going to win, but
still, yeah, it just seems like, it's like I've said, I mean, I've said it before. It seems like this year the referees are calling other things more and holding less.
Truth. It's the truth.
It's just weird. The talk's been going around a little bit. What are your current feelings on Gus?
So we had the athletic director come out and give him the thing dreaded support.
Yeah.
And did you hear the circumstances of how that happened?
Not exactly.
Okay, so this is what happened. They had, some player availability, and Jared Stidham was at the podium or at answering questions to the media, and Alan Green comes in the room, and a couple of the Auburn beat writers, you know, Brandon Marcel and Jay Tate, immediately go over and kind of corner him to say, "All right, what's your feeling on Gus right now?" You know, and Alan Green. You know, after they went back and forth, and finally they said, "Look, we need you to say something more direct here." And Alan Green, that's when he made the comments about Gus is going to be the coach next year. He's the coach of the future, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Alan Green had a pre-planned press conference to address the coaching situation.
Right. That's a good distinction.
Was, it was a moment. And Alan Green's a smart guy. He may have known that he was going to get put into that corner and plan to go in there and deliver that message. That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it wasn't, you know, a press conference to address the coaching situation or something.
Right.
So my feeling is, like I said a couple weeks ago, I think we're going to go 7-5 and go to a bowl game. And I think that, and I get it. I'm unhappy with losing to Georgia, and I'm unhappy with the way we played. But I think turning around, and I get and understand that people aren't happy, but turning around and paying somebody many millions of dollars to go away when you went 7-5, went to a bowl game, is unrealistic. I get you can be unhappy, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think Gus is 100% going to be the coach next year. And I think if in your mind, you know, I can't ever be happy with Gus coaching a game again, you're going to have a challenge because he's going to be the coach next year. And he's going to, you know, so you have to deal with that, I think. What do you think?
Well, just looking at the numbers, if it works out that we go 7-5 and go to a bowl game, then everything will come down to who we play and how we play in the bowl. if we play a lesser team and win, like we did in 2015, this will be our third 8-5 season in his 6 years. So 3 of his 6 years, we will go 8-5. If we lose our bowl game, then we will have 2 8-5 seasons and 2 7-6 seasons. So, and then a 12-2 at the beginning and 10-4 last year. So 3 8-5s and a 7-6, or 2 8-5s and 2 7-6s. What do you think about that?
I'm not real happy with it.
Yeah. And we've won one bowl game since the beating Virginia in 2011.
I mean, I'm not hung up on the bowl game thing.
Okay.
I'm much more hung up on the, you know, we have to beat Georgia and Alabama and LSU thing. I get it. He beat Georgia and Alabama last year. But, you know, I thought we didn't play very well in this game. And I think, you know, the biggest thing for me is, are we beating the teams we should beat, and playing well in the games, even when the other team is better than us? That's what I look at. And I look back over the course of Gus's time at Auburn, and in the last couple of years in particular, I think about, you know, again, the 2 years ago in that same stadium, the game where Kerryon and Sean White were banged up. That was a winnable game, and we did a poor job coaching and lost that game. I think the Tennessee game this year was, we were better than that team and we should have beaten them. I think the LSU game this year, you know, we were better than the LSU game last year. We were beating them badly down there and kind of went in turtle mode and lost it. I think like that the LSU game last year, I think, is one that goes on Gus. I think, you know, the get too conservative thing. I honestly think like some of the stuff in the LSU game or the Tennessee game this year was kind of fluky. And I think we honestly in a lot of ways outplayed those two teams in those games, and they won. So good for them. But I think like one less penalty or the ball bounces a different way in one of those games, that we win those one of those games and we're not having this conversation at all. So that's the part where, and the other thing I would say again, and this goes back to the bigger discussion about, okay, you want to get rid of Gus, is people like to pretend that last year didn't happen. Like that we did not beat Georgia and Alabama when they were number one last year. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, you know, it doesn't matter. But to me, the number of coaches who can assemble and coach a game where the team performs at that high a level. And again, I talked about this last year on the podcast after those games, but there's a guy named Brian Freeman who does some advanced statistics stuff. And one of the things he does is like a game score kind of thing that looks at purely at a numbers perspective about how teams performed, especially compared to the opponent. And those two games were in the 10 best games that any team in college football played last year. Any team, any game, those two games were. And my thing is, the number of coaches who can get teams to that level is not huge. I don't think it's a very large pool. So I get it. You know, you're unhappy. I'm unhappy. I'm unhappy like you are with the offense and how we used to be fun and creative and now we're not. And I'm unhappy with, you know, the reasons that we are not successful this year are structural things with the offensive line and the running backs that were, you know, the seeds were planted last year and the year before. And if we had done things differently, then we'd be in a different situation now, regardless of the in-game coaching this year. If we had recruited offensive line or running back differently 2 years ago, we'd be in a different position today. So, I mean, that's the other part of it, too, is like, and Gus is responsible for those decisions. He makes the decisions about who gets offered scholarships on the offensive side of the ball. So he has to own that. So.
Well, I had a quote. This is a quote from me, and you can, and I'll elucidate on it at the end, where I said, I'm fed up with our coach, dang it. We were supposed to be a national championship contender this year, and the defense has been about as good as expected, but the offense has been terrible. Where is the passing game we expected? Our quarterback was supposed to be an upcoming NFL star, but as a junior, he's not looking that good. And man, that loss to Georgia was excruciating. When did I say that?
I don't know.
2003.
Hmm.
A few months later, we went 13-0. So you never know. I'm just, I like to see parallels in Auburn seasons. Mm-hmm. And if you go enough years, you see the same thing over and over, really, with different coaches, different players, different decades even. And so I guess I'm just saying that we've seen this movie before, and I guess, I don't know. I mean, the possibility is always there that next year we could go undefeated, you know? Turn it right around. I mean, if we could go to the national championship game the year after we went 3-9, then anything in the world is possible. But I am getting pretty frustrated. I don't know if there'd been Twitter in 2003, what the Tuberville pro con would have been, right? What would people have been saying about Tubbs during and after the 2003 season? But
it's a good thing I didn't have it during the Georgia Tech game that year. I'm going to say
oh,
that.
Gosh. Oh, wow. You'd have banned yourself after that. But, I was going to say, the thing that gets me down the most about this season is not that we're going to end the regular season with 7 wins, and if we're lucky, get a bad bowl opponent and go 8-5, and that's about, like I just said, that'll be our third one in 6 seasons, which was enough that they were going to fire Terry Bowden over going that, 8-5 type record every year for a while there. I think the thing that really gets me down is that we actually allowed ourselves to believe that this would be the year we would be as good as advertised. This would be the year we would break the stupid streak of we're not good in years we're supposed to be good. Right? I mean, at the beginning of this year, we were like, oh, well, most years when that's the case, most years when we're saying that, and then it ends up not happening. Well, we see the reasons why. But we're like, oh, but this year we have the quarter. This isn't Jeremy Johnson coming in and replacing Nick Marshall. We have that, we have the defense. We have the quarterback. We have the receivers. The coaches, everything is solid. We've got the same, staff. We had no real reason coming into this year to think that we were being fooled again. We really had every reason to believe that this year would be different. And guess what? We all got fooled again. And I'm tired of getting fooled again. I'm turning into Roger Daltrey. I don't want to get fooled again, John. We did it all over again. I think you can see where the theme of this episode is going, by the way. So how did we get fooled again?
I want to step back from that a second to say I was 100% on board with that, and there were legitimate reasons to think that we would, having a good defense and a good returning quarterback,
that we should
have been optimistic.
Yes.
I wanted people have this perception, and I think they're like the I'm not trying to turn into this gigantic Gus Defender person because I'm unhappy too.
I get accused of that on Twitter all the time when I've been on the I bailed out of that over a year ago.
I know, but it sticks with you. But I think there's a perception that this Auburn team is terrible. That it is a terrible, terrible football team, and it's just not. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not great. It's not going to go to the playoff. We're not going to win the SEC, but we're not bad either. They're a good team playing at a really tough conference, who's lost some games against tough teams. On the advanced statistics side, we're ranked like 18th, 19th, or 20th in all of those rankings. Okay. So we're not ranked 60th or 50th or 40th or whatever, last in the SEC or anything. But even that is disappointment compared to where we were and where we thought we'd be. So that's the biggest piece, is it's disappointment compared to where we thought we'd be.
If this team had Braden Smith and Kerryon Johnson, what would we be right now? What would our record be right now? It wouldn't be heading towards 7-5.
No, we'd be headed towards 10-2 or 11-1 or whatever.
I think so. And I think that's kind of what we thought was going to happen. We didn't realize that losing those two guys, that they would basically be irreplaceable this year. But they've been irreplaceable this year. There's no question about it.
But I think the fact that they're irreplaceable, that Gus has a responsibility for that. I mean, I think they needed to be able to look at the roster of offensive linemen and running backs and say, who's going to be an SEC caliber, player at those positions going forward? And I think, running back, I don't think it was hard to look at that roster and say, like, we have some concerns here. I mean, Georgia lost two guys to the NFL last year. Well, we lost Kerryon, and they have freaking Swift and Holyfield. Mm-hmm. And we got.
But the guys we have are like 4-star backs, and we've got like half a dozen of them.
But
that's the thing that's so bizarre to me. We keep bringing in 4-star running backs, and yet we're like, wow, I wish we had a running back. You got like 6.
No, I don't give a crud about the rankings. What we have, you have to look at the running backs, go, who do we have that can carry the ball between the tackles against an SEC team? Mm-hmm. And you immediately can look at our pile of running backs and go, well, Shivers can't do that, and Cam Martin can't do that.
Cam Martin.
We don't know if Asa Martin can do that because we're never going to play him. So then you're down to Whitlow, who's a redshirt freshman. And Malik Miller, who I can't do it. I mean,
Cam Martin, coaches, I think I'm going to transfer since I'm not really getting to play and I'm not being very effective. No. Don't transfer. Stay. We'll use you. And he's now on a milk carton.
Well, but I think that's one where they need being more honest with him and themselves would have been better.
Yeah.
Like, I like him, and he's a good – everything I hear is he's a wonderful human being, but he was never going to be an every-down SEC tailback.
No.
And telling him that and telling ourselves that was delusion.
Absolutely.
If we'd have let him go and brought in some, grad transfer guy who was, an older guy who weighed 230 pounds, could run between the tackles – would we be in a much better place now?
Cam Martin would have been a good running back for, like, Oregon.
He would be fine, again, if he was our third running back,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He just reminds me of all those Oregon backs that were little and quick, and you didn't run them up the middle. You put them in space and threw them little, passes in the flat and stuff and gave them draws and stuff. And we never did that. We looked like, using him, we look like Scott Loeffler out there this year. I just anything else about Georgia and Auburn and Gus before we point out the fact that we have one really good team on campus? It's just not the football team.
I'm good for now.
We've got a basketball team. We have, my friend, a basketball team. Did you get to watch the win over Washington?
I did. That was very exciting.
Oh, man. That was great. They toyed with Washington and then put it in cruise control for the second half and still won by 22. They could have won by 44 if they'd wanted to.
And Washington's a good team.
Yeah.
It was a great crowd, great energy in that arena. And it was really fun to watch. I love this team. We have great depth. We have balance. I love the rebounding. On both ends, we really dominated Washington on the glass. They were getting one shot. We were getting two or three shots every time. So sometimes they still do, drive me crazy a little bit. They get ahead, and then we start taking these little crazy three-pointers with no ball movement. But then they got out of that, and And again, like, we beat them that bad, and Purifoy didn't play, and Wiley, was clearly rusty and barely getting back.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing we always hear, and it makes me laugh, is like there was talking about how great the crowd was, and even the Washington coach was just marveling at the crowd, you know. There was like a whole story just on the Washington coach being amazed by our crowd. And I always laugh because I think, you know, Auburn fans and Auburn crowds are always like that when you give them a reason. Mm-hmm. It's not that Auburn is a bad basketball school with fans that don't care about basketball. Auburn is a great sports community who will totally rock behind any sport if it gives them reason to. And so the basketball program over the last several years has given us reason to get increasingly optimistic and hopeful and have confidence. And so when you put a team out there that's supposed to be really good and plays like they really are good, then heck yeah, the Auburn crowd's going to be awesome. It's going to be that way every game as long as they're living up to what they're expected to do. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
It's true, very true.
So the basketball team doesn't have a whole lot of games coming up immediately. They got the Maui, I guess, Invitational coming up, and they have another game or two in there.
Listen, there's a chance we play Duke in the Maui Invitational, and they have like three lottery picks on that team, I think. I want Duke. I want to play them.
It's the worst one. This is a big one. You hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey. And I say huge.
Wow.
And I don't even know like what time of day those Maui games would be on, probably the middle of the night or 5 a.m. or whatever, but I would be I'm all in if we played Duke in one of those games.
Yeah, that's, I mean, well.
Certainly Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
I had to get that one in there. But that would be nice to get to play. John, you know what this is?
No, what is it, man?
Liberty Hate Week 2018.
Finally, it's here. We've waited all season for our great clash with Liberty. I hear you have something for me about that.
I do.
Do you want to break down Liberty's offense or defense or special teams, perhaps?
No, I do not. In the Sagarin rankings, Liberty is 130th.
Ooh.
So they're not good.
So it's a competitive game is what you're telling me.
No, they're really bad, and we're going to beat them fine. But I have a quiz for you about Liberty University, since a lot of people don't know anything about them. Are you ready?
I'm very excited to. Yes, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to give you multiple choice questions, all right?
Okay.
The first question is, Liberty University is located in A, Asheville, North Carolina, B, Greenville, South Carolina, C, Lynchburg, Virginia, D, Abington, Virginia.
I believe it's in Lynchburg, Virginia, and I would never want to live in a town called Lynchburg, especially if it's in the South. Just want to say that.
You are correct. It's in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Lynchburg. Okay.
All right. The next question, the enrollment, total enrollment for Liberty University, is it A, under 4,000, B, 4,000 to 12,000, C, 12,000 to 20,000, or D, over 20,000?
You know, I have a weird feeling it's over 20,000.
You are correct.
Wow.
They actually have a huge online enrollment part of the university. The total enrollment is over 100,000.
Good gosh.
Because they have done a huge amount of work on the online course thing, and they've actually got a lot of people, like in the military, for example, who are taking online courses through Liberty University. I think they're the biggest private nonprofit university in the United States.
Well, I have some thoughts about them, but I'll keep them to myself. But that's amazing. Sure.
All right, and finally, here's the last question.
I'm undefeated. Go ahead.
The name of Liberty's mascot is
God.
A, Pyro the Flame.
So you've got... I like the idea. It's in Lynchburg, and the mascot could be Pyro. Is there you know, their other mascot, Klepto?
Right.
All right, what's my next choice?
B, Ember the Elk. C, the Demon Deacon. Or D, Sparky the Eagle.
Well, I know they're the Liberty Flames, right?
They are.
They are flaming. It's between the Pyro, the Fire, the Flame, and the Eagle. I'm going to go with the Eagle and be mad if I'm blown it.
You are correct.
Hey!
Sparky the Eagle is the name of their mascot.
Wow. Wow.
Please clap.
All right. I really had no idea. Okay, so that's that was good. That was good. Where did you dredge that up?
I knew some things about them already, and I just made that up.
Oh, very good, very good. All right, well, let's lay it. Let's one more time, and then we'll probably back at the end because this is a big week. Ah, it's a big week.
Liberty Hate Week 2018.
Yes, get that win, fellas. Get us to 7 wins. Let's see. We've got to we got to do our patrons thing real quick, and then we got a few more features coming up here. Remember that for as little as a dollar a week, I gotta turn off the music, it just distracts me. As little as $1 a month, you can join and be part of our family that keeps us on the air and pays our bills and keeps us podcasting and doing all sorts of things here at White Rocket, including you get early access to the We Believed. I gave away a bunch of free books last month. You get to be in part of the Power Poll. We have our Fantasy Formula One team. Lots of fun. Oh, I got to check in and see how that came out this week because we had a big race yesterday. And I dropped some points because stupid Esteban Ocon ran into Max Verstappen, but when he was leading the freaking race. But anyway, so let me thank our current patrons and tell you that if you want to join up and help, you may just want to help keep us on the air, but you also get other various rewards as well during the year, then just go to www.auwishbone.com. There's a great big orange button where you can click to join, read all about it and everything, but it's www.auwishbone.com. I have to thank the great Brendan O'Dwyer, as well as Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, and Brandon Sisson. There's Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, and finally, Ronald McCollum, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medina, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, and Lawrence Kane, plus our one-time donors, including the great Surfer Chickify and others. www.auwishbone.com. I got to say, John, it's looking like for next season's Formula One Fantasy League, we will have at least 5 entrants. So there's lots of, you know, in other words, it's not an overwhelming crush. I'm in another league. I'm in the Shift F1 podcast league, and I'm like 135 out of 800. So it's harder to compete in those huge leagues. But if you join ours, you've only got to beat 5 other people. And so, you know, All right, so let's see. We've got this week's superhero audio from Jared, which is always a hoot, so let's tee it up.
Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist from the Longbox Crusade podcast, here with this week's Auburn superhero battles. This week, Auburn went in looking a bit like Captain America. A little bit powered up, feeling a little bit good, but still not a top-tier level superhero. And we squared off against Georgia's Green Lantern. Now, the Green Lantern is in a higher power bracket because of that ring. And I mean, Cap's got that strong defensive shield, and our defense is doing all they can, but Georgia's just got too many weapons, and that's where that green ring comes in. All kinds of weapons at their disposal. Now, before we are too complimentary, we make Georgia sound like some heroic Green Lantern, they're actually going to fall into the category of the Guy Gardner Green Lantern. For those of you not steeped in comics, Guy Gardner's a Green Lantern, but he's also a big-time jerk. And when you line up to do a fake kick, when you've obviously won the game in hand, that sort of cutesy, dumb stuff puts you in the category of jerk. So, welcome to Guy Gardner jerk status, Georgia. You've earned it, sadly, once again. But chin up, Auburn, Captain America always gets back in the battle. I want to thank Pat DJ Christados, who does the edits on this, also takes care of our eagle that we keep in studio. And you know what else? He also feeds and takes care of the live tiger we keep in here. So for today's sign off, let's hear from the tiger. War Eagle, everybody.
No. Jared may go to jail if they keep a live tiger in there. I'm not sure that's legal. I don't know about the eagle either, but having an actual tiger in there in his house, I don't know. The
production value for that is the high point of this entire podcast.
It is. It puts us to shame. Oh, man. Well, you know, just to be fair, Jared's producer is editing a minute and 28 second segment. I'm editing an hour and a half segment every week, but that's okay. He's always really good. I just had to point out one thing, though. He's associating Georgia and rings, and I think that may have been a little stretch because Georgia hadn't known a lot about rings in a long time. At least not that ring. Maybe they got a Green Lantern ring, but they ain't got the big one in a long time. In fact, we were pointing out yesterday on Twitter, somebody said it since the Reagan administration. I'm like, no. It was still the Carter administration when Georgia won their last national championship. The Carter administration. Which is kind of fitting since he's from Georgia. Let's see. So now, let's see if we have... I had to move things around on my screen here. Aha! All right, so...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
What do we got?
All right, first question. And this is in response to something that we asked about last week. Brendan O'Dwyer went back and calculated Auburn's record in the early kickoff games. So salute to Brendan for doing that. I really appreciate it. And he went back and looked at it, you know, here's our record in those games. For like our home record is 15-5, away 3-7, neutral site 1-2. The most games we played in that time slot is Ole Miss.
Oh, interesting.
Over the last 10 years, mm-hmm. We're 19-14 in those games.
Oof. Ouch.
So, but I mean, again, you got 2012. It was a lot of kickoffs in 2012. We were 2-4.
We were the early risers in 2012.
Yeah. So in 2015, we were 2-3 in the early kickoff games. So.
Well, it's kind of a self-perpetuating thing, right? If you lose, you're on at 11 o'clock more. And then if you're losing that much, you must not be a very good team. So you're losing regardless of what time it is. So it's kind of a self-perpetuating cycle. It's kind of like the 11 o'clock time slot is the loser bracket. And if you end up in the loser bracket, it's because you lost. You know,
and you got to win to get out of the loser bracket.
And then at 11 o'clock, it's hard to win. And so you're back stuck in the loser bracket again. Yeah, it is. You either are in the 11 o'clock games a lot or hardly at all. I mean, how many times is Alabama in the 11 o'clock game?
Never.
Right. See, so It's self-perpetuating. What else we got?
All right. All right, next question is from Ryan Brown, who says, how many points has Auburn scored the second half in Athens in the last 9 years?
is not much.
The answer is zero. He said, if you expand the parameters to games played in the state of Georgia, including the SEC championship, the answer would still be zero.
Oh.
If you were to include points scored in the second quarter of those games, it would be 3 points from this year.
Well, wait a minute. The SEC championship game in 2013.
No, he's talking about against Georgia particularly.
Oh, okay. I see.
He said, you have to go back to 2005, 13 years ago, since we won in Athens. That's three coaches ago.
Yeah.
We've won more in Tuscaloosa. We won in Tuscaloosa twice in the same time period.
Wow.
So he says, I'm supposed to be asking a question, but my question is more, you know, WTF. So.
Yes, that's a valid question there. Yeah, it is crazy.
And he followed up with a question about scheduling, which there's been a lot of discussion about. I can't remember who it was. It was Josh Dubb basically looked at our schedule ahead couple of years and saw that there was an opportunity for them to move the Georgia game up earlier, you know, like beginning of November and break it up a little bit.
Yeah, I know that's one of the temporary solutions, yeah.
And I think, and Alan Green has said that the earliest they could do the switch thing would be potentially 2025, and you need to prepare yourself now because when that happens, we're going to play two games in a row in Athens. That's the solution. They played two games in a row at Auburn to get us here, and when we go back, we're going to play two games in a row in Athens, so you just need to prepare yourself for that. And I think it may happen eventually, but there's a bunch of other moving pieces. I hope that the SEC takes a look at the whole schedule comprehensively
and
shakes it up so that we play the other teams in the East more as part of the shakeup.
It is time. It is beyond time to completely renovate the SEC schedule. It's just so bad. This is a cobbled together thing where we had 10 teams forever, and then we had 12 teams for a while, and now we've got 14, and dividing it geographically the way they do is not good. Dividing it specifically geographically the way we do is abominable. Playing eight games in a 14-team league is ridiculous. Never getting to play, you know, playing teams like Clemson more often than we play Florida and Tennessee is ridiculous. Coming to Missouri once every 12 years, as I've said over and over, is ridiculous. It's just stupid. The whole thing. I mean, again, we're playing at Florida next year. The last time we played at Florida was when Wes Byram was a freshman. That's insane. So, yeah, how many Florida coaches ago was that?
Well done.
That's a lot of Florida coaches that never had to play Auburn at home.
So, no, I think we're really losing something. I think the SEC is losing something because I think those games, I mean, on a simple level, those games have TV value. And we aren't creating them enough. I don't know whether it's go to a 9-game conference schedule or shake up the 8-game, then go to pods or whatever else, but we've got to change it. It's a huge if they don't change it, then I'm going to go on record as saying we need to schedule Florida as a non-conference game.
That's good.
Like some other teams and other conferences have done that, and if they don't shake it up, and it's going to be forever that we need to start scheduling Florida as a non-conference.
But I'm still going to say, and I agree that it's fair that Georgia had to play in Auburn twice. They won one of them, and the other one was the other one was the famous.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and but in fact, I think that was the.
A miracle that turned to hair. A miracle that turned to hair.
Right, but if we have to go to Athens, where it's been a house of horror for us for the last 9 years or whatever, us going to Athens twice in a row.
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
Amen. Amen.
Mm. All right, a couple more questions. Jeremy Minton says, why does Gus not keep Shivers on the field more? Dude can run plays, and his plays bigger than he really is. And where's Ace and Martin? Did he fumble too much in practice like he did in high school and in the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game and Gus doesn't trust him?
About Shivers, but yeah.
The Ace and Martin thing is mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Again, like I talked about the size and the nature of Auburn's running backs, He's the other guy in the roster that has the physical body to be an every down SEC running back. And Whitlow's like 50%, and we're playing him. And
yeah,
you know, I just don't understand it. Like we had the thing a couple years ago where we kind of blew up the quarterback room and cleaned everybody out, and we're in a better place now and going forward. Like, we kind of need to do that with the running back room.
And again, which is insane considering that they're like 4-star running backs. I don't understand it.
And I think, like, again, I mean, Shivers is a little bit of a gadget player. And I think he and Cam Martin are kind of in the same mold in that way.
Is much better than Cam Martin, though.
No, I mean, he is. He's a lot better. But again, he's a freshman. And I think like 2 years from now, this same group, Whitlow, Asa, Martin, and Shivers, we're going to be fine.
Oh, yeah.
But we need to recruit more guys behind them so that we have, you know, somebody else who can play when they're not 100% or they need a day off or whatever. You can't wait until these guys are gone and they look around and go, we don't have anybody.
No, I agree.
And I mean, I think, like, Whitlow, I was really impressed with some of his play this year. And I think 2 years from now when he's – you know, been in the program. You saw the difference in Kerryon, you know, and Trey Mason and those guys from their time when they came in to the time they left, just in their body and how it changed.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think Booby Whitlow, 2 years from now, could be a stud.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have to have other guys that can take the load off now. And especially, like,
as long as we don't kill him, as long as we don't kill him before he ever gets
a chance. That's exactly right. I want a short yardage running back. Like, I want a 250-pound guy that can get us 2 yards on third two. That's what I want in the offseason. The next question is from Steven at Steven AUNI. Says, I feel Gus will get another year, deserve it or not, but how could it be any different? The O-line might not be any better. The QB situation looks shaky at best, and a good chunk of the defensive line is headed to the NFL. What can Gus do to make 2019 any different than 2018? Because it certainly has the potential to be worse.
Well, here's the question for me. Is J.B. Grimes part of the problem or part of the solution? In other words, if we keep him on the staff for another year, will the offensive line get better? Or is what we have now the best we're going to have under him?
I mean, I think, number one, the offensive line will get better simply because we're returning guys. And one of the key indicators of success and one of the reasons we were so successful in 2017 is offensive line experience is one of the most reliable indicators of team success year over year. And I will take the hit for not sending the warning flag on that a lot more than I should have this year. It was a reason I was high on the team last year, and I should have been a reason that I was, you know, much more cautious this year. We're going to have a lot of returning success, and offensive line is like other positions. It takes a while to get there. So I do think some of these guys, we have everybody coming back and the players behind them coming back. I think those guys can get better. I think the issue with Grimes is honestly tied. The bigger question is Chip Lindsey coming back? And I suspect he's not. And then who becomes the offensive coordinator? Do they want to bring their own offensive line coach? Because many of them will. You know, we talked about Hugh Freeze. I don't love him as a human being. I get it in the sense that the appeal for Hugh Freeze is this. A lot of the issue with Gus is that he won't listen to other people and that he won't trust them and he keeps sticking his control over the offense in. Right. And maybe with Freeze, a guy who had been a head coach in SEC and who's had success, you know, that he could come in and change and really move the passing game part forward and tell Gus, like, get out of my business.
So basically the answer is not to find the best offensive coordinator, it's to find an offensive coordinator that Gus just happens to listen to.
Well, I think that's huge. I mean, I think there's if Chip leaves, there's going to be two kinds of candidates. One is guys who are really good offensive coordinators, but also they're going to be guys who Malzahn knows, Malzahn trusts, that run, you know, understand his system, and that will do what Malzahn tells them to do. Like the guy that's the offensive coordinator at NC State, Elijah Drinkwitz, I think was at Auburn in 2010 and stuff. And I think he, as some kind of assistant, and he knows Malzahn and knows the system, and he's doing a good job. But I think like he's not going to stand up to Gus and tell him no, get out of the play calling and stuff. But at the same time, if you bring in somebody that Gus doesn't know and doesn't trust on the front end, I think your chances of having that relationship work well are less, even if it's somebody who has a strong personality and background. So, I think that's the chance of the team getting better. I mean, the other part is, again, this is stupid to say, but schedule is big. We get more better home schedule next year, less tough away schedule. We still play a tough non-conference game in a neutral site, but, I think that matters. All right. Our next question is from Darius, and I've heard this. It's Darius at JB56. I've heard this from other people, and he said, I know football is supposed to be fun, and at the end of the day, it is just a game. But seeing Jared Stidham smiling and giggling on the sideline while we were getting beat was more disappointing than the loss itself. It was almost as if he thought he was at a flag football game at the YMCA and not the Deep South's oldest rivalry. I've noticed this in other games as well, and I think his lack of fire and leadership has hurt the offense. Don't get me wrong, I like Stidham, but we need a true alpha dog at QB. What are your thoughts?
Well, Ben Leard got a lot of complaints about that in 1998, and then the next year he was the All-SEC quarterback. So, I mean, you know, these are young guys still, and they're out there trying to have fun. And I know that for us it's like life or death, serious, you know, our entire lives revolve around this crap, but I don't know that that's always the case for all the players. For them, it's that thing that they do when they're not in class, you know, and or not on a date or not whatever. So I can see it both ways, honestly.
I mean, I understand this sentiment. Like, we as fans want the players to be as upset with losing as we are.
Right.
And we want them to show remorse. Yeah. And sadness and frustration.
I like the remorse. Good word.
But I like Jared Stidham is wired differently a little bit. He's a very positive, upbeat person. Yeah. And like he is not the great white shark out there that Nick Marshall was.
Right.
And he's not the Cam Newton.
Nope.
And I think he's like some of the other guys you talk about, Brandon Cox or Ben Laird.
It just takes a while to get going, but there it is.
And I think he tries to lead through positivity and that kind of stuff. So I get that. I understand. I've heard this. And to me, this is one of those things of like losing makes people, if we were winning and he was acting like that, people wouldn't say anything, but we're losing and people see him like that. And
it makes everything magnified.
It makes everything worse. So yeah. I don't think it's some kind of character flaw in him. And I don't think it rubs players the wrong way. And I don't think if we blocked better and he was completing a bunch more passes because he had more time to throw, I think people wouldn't even worry about this kind of thing.
Yep. Yep. So. That it?
That's it.
Why don't we take a trip?
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Well, we had some kind of surprising outcomes on Saturday. I have to admit, I was doing family stuff most of the day and wasn't able to watch other games. We got home just in time for the Georgia game. But I saw that Florida was just South Carolina was beating the snot out of Florida until the very end when apparently Florida came back and won. Did you happen to see what did Florida do to come back and win that game? Because they were down like 31-17 or something in the third quarter, it seems like, and they won 35-31.
They just got hot. They started making some plays, and they get some turnovers and stuff. So
yeah, that'll do it. And same thing, Vanderbilt was beating Missouri, and Missouri was able to come back and win. That would have been horrifying for Missouri. And I want to say, yeah, when I did peek in on Ole Miss Texas A&M, it was, I think it was 17-17 in the, or no, it was 21-21. It was 21-21 in the third quarter, and it looks like A&M put the hammer down on them.
Yep.
Beat them like 17-3 after that. Tennessee beat Kentucky. 24-7.
What the hell is the world coming to?
I mean, this was Kentucky's year. How do they turn around and lose to freaking Tennessee? Well, how did we?
Kentucky is a very limited offensive team.
Yeah.
And I think their defense has gotten worn down the last few weeks with playing a tougher schedule. They played A&M and Georgia and, and then Tennessee. And I think Tennessee and Georgia and some other teams have kind of laid out a roadmap for stopping Kentucky's offense. They're kind of it's Benny Snell and that's it. And for Kentucky to win, they need to be in a low scoring kind of defensive struggle kind of game. And they went to Tennessee and didn't play well, and that was it.
I'm just looking at Tennessee's schedule. They are 5-5. They lost to West Virginia, who's ranked. They lost to Florida, who's pretty good. They lost to Georgia. They lost to Alabama, and they lost to South Carolina. That's not embarrassing. And they beat East Tennessee State, UTEP, Auburn, Charlotte, and Kentucky. Until they beat Kentucky on Saturday, they had won four games, John. They had beaten East Tennessee State, UTEP, Charlotte, and us. So a win over Kentucky makes me feel better just because we're not the only good, supposedly good team that Tennessee has beaten now. It would have sucked if they'd ended the year 4-8 and their only four wins were those three and us.
Yep.
But now they've knocked off number 11, formerly number 11, Kentucky. They still got to play Missouri, who they can beat, and they still got to play Vanderbilt, who they can beat. So they could end up with the same record that we have, 7-5.
They could. I mean, I suspect Missouri will beat them, but we'll see.
We'll see. Alabama beat Mississippi State 24-0 because that's the law, and that's what I always tell you, that Mississippi State is not legally allowed under current federal statutes to beat Alabama. They can't.
And I can tell you the SEC officials got that memo.
They did, yes. They understood that that's what's supposed to happen. LSU, look at you, Arkansas. Look at you, 24-17. How did Arkansas? I saw nothing of this game. What did Arkansas do?
I didn't watch a minute of this game either, but I looked at this box score and stuff. LSU, came in and it took the lead, but Arkansas is better than they were a couple months ago. They're playing better. I think they've improved, and I think they're going to be a decent team next year.
Let me see. We haven't done this in a while. The current SEC football standings, Georgia's 7-1, Kentucky's 5-3, Florida's 5-3 now. So Kentucky has a tiebreaker, but they're tied. South Carolina's 4-4, Missouri 2-4, Tennessee 2-4, Vanderbilt 1-5. So Tennessee's over Vandy now. And let's see, Alabama, of course, 7-0, LSU's 5-2. A&M 4-3, Auburn 3-4. Hey, we're up to fourth in the West now. Mississippi State 2-4, Ole Miss 1-5, and Arkansas 0-6 and 2-8 overall. Arkansas is 2-8 with two games to go. They could do worse than our 3-9 year. That would suck for them. Be good for us. Let me see. So next week's games, this is like the worst slate of – this is always the bad week, you know. This is always a bad week. The only thing good about this week is that it is
– Liberty Hate Week 2018.
But aside from that, aside from that, this is that horrible week where everybody plays crap teams to get ready for their big finale. There's only two decent SEC matchups, Arkansas at Mississippi State, which Mississippi State should win, but, you know, and Missouri at Tennessee. And I'm going to go ahead, let's see. I'm going to go ahead with Missouri at Tennessee.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
I'm going to lock up Tennessee, John. Tennessee gets the win. They're at home. They'll probably have a raucous 80,000 people in that 105,000-seat stadium against Missouri, and I think they're going to get it done, and they're going to end the season 7-5. That's my prediction. After they beat Vandy.
I like it.
Let's see. Ole Miss at Vandy. And then another SEC game Ole Miss could actually win. And then after that, I mean, you have Rice at LSU, UT Chattanooga at South Carolina, UAB at Texas A&M. What do you think?
I mean, Texas A&M is going to win, but UAB is good on defense, and they're going to make this surprisingly competitive for.
Well, UAB is higher. UAB is higher ranked, aren't they?
I don't know about that, but they're solid, and I think this isn't unlike these other games where these teams could sleepwalk through it. Texas A&M is going to have to try.
I don't know if A&M is still ranked after we beat them, but UAB was ranked this week. The first time in history that they've been ranked in the top 25. And this is a team that 2 years ago didn't have a football program. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yes, Dave Guy's done a great job. There's a lot of credit.
Have we found our next coach?
People have already been lobbying for him for weeks. So.
Wow. UMass at Georgia. Idaho at Florida. Oh, the famous, yeah, that's always. Middle Tennessee at Kentucky and the Citadel, Alabama. I hope Alabama gets as much crap for playing the Citadel as we did, because we got a bunch of crap for playing the freaking Citadel. And
nobody will say a word to them.
All right. Well, any last thoughts about next week, this coming Saturday's games, or Liberty or anything else? Give us Liberty or give us death.
I'm fired up about Liberty Hate Week 2018.
I am too.
I'm still unhappy about losing to Georgia. I really hate them, and I don't like not playing well in that game. And then, unless you're going to cheer for the team injured in hair this Saturday, maybe a good, as you mentioned with the schedule, maybe a good week to go apple picking or do some other family activities.
Yeah.
Before we get into the heavy college football down the stretch.
I think that's good advice. Good advice.
And maybe a good mental, emotional break for some fans.
No kidding.
after the last couple of weeks. So.
I think some of them need it. I'm not excluding myself. Instead of watching football on Saturday, we were watching the Nutcracker and the Four Realms. I'm not sure that was a step up from like Vandy, Missouri or whatever. But, at least it got us away. So, when we reconvene in a week, John, we will be talking about the Iron Bowl. Yay. All right. And then we get to talk about...
The Vulgars are full.
We'll be talking about the Vulgars when we talk about the Iron Bowl. All right, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
Becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
All right. that went well. I'm glad we got it out of the way. My wife is excited because we get to watch Poldark tonight instead of.
I almost started the podcast this week by saying this is now a podcast devoted to Auburn basketball and Poldark.
Well, maybe that's where we need to go with it. That's our next. That's our next direction we'll go.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.